The next item is the Manufactured Housing Committee report, and we have, of course, Mr. Lawrence Lank, our Director of Planning and Zoning, here today. And what I'd like to do is just try to recap. We have several members of the committee here also. I saw Mr. Steve Class and Ms. Dixie Boucher, who helped us considerably with their committee work. The County Council appointed a committee to review manufactured housing issues, and the committee has met three times and has made, they have made various recommendations to be considered by the County Council. We have provided copies of the minutes of each of the three meetings for the committee for your review, as well as a summary of the recommendations. And we thought we'd like to just review some of the recommendations of the committee today. In the, there is a memo attached to the minutes, and in that memo, the first three items are basically housekeeping type corrections. They are revising definitions of a manufactured home, a manufactured home park, and the definitions of an accessory building. And the committee recommended, and these were some things Mr. Lank brought up, to improve how these items are defined in the county code, and the committee agreed with that, with those recommendations. The fourth item listed is regarding accessory buildings, and what they're recommending is that we add to the code a section somewhat with this language: no part of any accessory building shall extend closer than 5 feet to the boundaries of an individual residential site, or within 20 feet to a main residential structure or addition thereto on another residential structure, or within 10 feet of an accessory building on another residential site. Now, currently, that rule is 20 feet from accessory buildings or shed-type buildings must be 20 feet from other sheds on other properties. So they're recommending change that from 20 feet to 10 feet, and then not exceed an overall height to 25 feet. The next part is also a change. An existing accessory building, the same dimension, may be replaced at the same location if the accessory building was previously permitted by the county and authorized, and is also authorized by park management. So that was recommendation was made, which is similar to the ordinance that the council was under, was considering before, although I don't think it required authorization by the park management. Mm-hmm. And then it,
good. I say, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
And then it all, they also noted that any decision to grant amnesty or to establish a new policy for locations of accessory buildings could be left to the county council's discretion if there is no proof that the structure was previously permitted or grandfathered. So that was one of their recommendations.
So that would kind of be like an appeal, I guess?
How does that work?
Currently,
does that work?
They do appeal to the Board of Adjustment.
But I'm just saying that what you just read there, could that be construed to be
a possible appeal to the county council?
Right. Yes. In other words, I have no records, right? There's no proof other than some verbal stuff or whatever. Anyway, can I make an appeal? Is that what that?
Yes. I attended all three meetings, and this issue came up on more than one occasion. And when it came up, I indicated that our committee was not given that right. authority to make that decision,
right.
that would need to be something that was decided by county council. I don't think it was written in such a way as meaning that this is part of the appeal or we were recommending that this was part of the appeal process.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply that our committee was not in a position to make that kind of decision. That would be up to the county council how they wanted to address that issue in the future.
But shouldn't part of that also, that also part there, include maybe that we could grant amnesty, but we ought to still have the park management should still be involved in that. In other words, should we, if can we grant amnesty to somebody that would have be in conflict with the park management?
I don't believe that this was a recommendation of the committee.
Okay. So
instead, it was just a comment by me that indicated that our committee was not addressing the issue. And when it was asked of me, I stated that we were not.
Consider that, because I think that's, like you said, it keeps coming up, that issue. If that issue does come up again, and maybe we ought to continue on with this issue later on, but part of that ought to be that any amnesty or granting, you know, things that were previously grandfathered or whatever should also be authorized, I guess, or have some kind of park management involvement in the decision, wouldn't you think?
In other words, you think that maybe we should give Mr. Lank the authority to put another building there if it has a footprint there and if it can't be settled, then come to the county council.
If it can't be what?
If it can't be settled. I mean, if Mr. Lank ever...
Well, I don't think the council should override a property owner, being the property owner, being the park management.
But we wouldn't necessarily be overriding them.
Right. You'd have to have the park managers.
Just give us our opinion at this point.
I don't know. I don't mind doing something like that, and maybe we need to address it later. But
I wouldn't mind giving someone the authority to grant amnesty in the case of a hardship. And we do have one or two cases that have been in the mill for months, well, years now, that are contested in court. And I think that it would behoove us to look at the idea of granting amnesty in the case of a hardship.
Well, that's what the variance board does.
So what's the purpose of the board?
Right. They grant hardships.
That's their purpose.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The variance, basically.
Right.
And the only other thing that would be possible, if it's even feasible by regulation, because you're dealing with the Board of Adjustment, the way their rules and regulations are, is there an appealable process through the board? Right now, can only go to court.
Has to go to court. Can't go to county council.
There is no appeal to council.
No appeal to council.
I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying it.
Let me just throw this out then. Maybe instead of having the people, because it is it's a burden placed upon these people to have to go to court. Maybe what we ought to do is change that, make that subtle change, that appeal instead of going to court comes to county council. Then if people don't like that decision, then they can go to court.
That's what I was saying.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're
That's what we do with subdivisions.
Everett,
what you do with what subdivisions and planning? Is it a state law?
The state law or our code?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I'm about to look into that.
Okay. While we got that on that topic, why don't we, Everett, put down in your notes there that we pursue finding out what it would take to change that, and that the appeal would come to county council as opposed to the court system.
And that's in reference to Board of Adjustment.
Board of Adjustment, because they're the only one. Because planning and zoning can be appealed to the county council.
Right.
I would ask Lawrence, if you're investigating this, to see if you can determine the logic that was used when they set that original process up.
But the original process was set up through state law.
Yeah.
Chapter 68
and 69. I think state law created the board to the court.
It does. I believe it does too.
Well, see, that's what maybe we have to get an amendment to the state law, and then we have to amend our documents.
It will probably be the state law. It would probably be in the way of a recommendation of county council to our legislators.
Yeah,
it probably affects all three counties.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it does.
I mean, it's all three counties.
Mr. Baker?
Yes. There's always different rules. Question for Mr. Lank. Would you anticipate many appeals to the county council? I mean, there are quite a few Board of Adjustment issues.
Well, if you have an appeal of a denial, it could be quite a few. If you have an appeal of an approval, there may be a few. But you get opposition to the application, and they have a way to appeal it through the council without cost, and they'd rather go to court for the dollars and cents.
You think about this, it could open up a
case. If a case is already in the court system, is there anything that the council can do?
If you try to amend a regulation, I do not believe that would be retroactive. I do not believe it would be retroactive. That's correct.
So there's no way the council can settle some pending cases?
There's methods that cases can be settled, but it would take a vote from the council in order to do that.
From the council.
Right.
Well, let's pursue it. You come back and tell us what the pitfalls are, and we'll look with the advantages and disadvantages and see if we can do something with it, because I do think it's an unfair financial burden on Board of Adjustment applicants to have to pay those court costs to get sometimes relief.
With counsel's permission, I would like to discuss this with Rick Burrell as well. Mr. Burrell is the attorney who represents the Board of Adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Whatever it
is. And he is familiar with that procedure.
Determine the cost estimates, too, please. Right. I don't know if they don't get into a whole lot of attorneys. Are there a lot of costs in the court process? I don't know.
Well, there have been a lot of county costs in the cases I'm talking about, right. Not just to the tenant.
Well, the court costs, Ever, you can correct me if I'm wrong. And the court costs, as far as the fees you pay, are minimal.
The lawyer
attorney fees they get.
Yeah. We have files this thick on some of these cases.
Okay. We're talking about their legal fees.
You always got to watch those attorneys.
That's right.
They'll still probably want to go right on proceed if we don't agree with the.
Well, Sam, people in the past have actually hired attorneys to help them with their appeal. So attorneys are still going to be in the mix, but right now people have the ability to handle appeal on their own or hire an attorney. Right now, to go to court, you need to have the attorney, and you can run up some extreme costs over a simple thing like a shed or some other thing. And I don't think it's fair at this point. So maybe we could try to make it better.
All right.
Maybe we can.
I think we want people to replace their deteriorated sheds. That's the objective. I'm sure, Sam, you would agree with that.
I've said that many times.
Many times.
Em and Joan agree again.
All right, keep on going, I guess.
Anything else? Mark.
That's enough on that topic.
The next item listed as number 5 is regarding handicap ramps and unenclosed landings. And as noted, the committee is recommending that open unenclosed landings with steps and handicap ramps providing access into the main residential structure may project 4 feet into the required side yard setback. An open unenclosed landing not exceeding 4x4 located near the elevation of the finished floor of the main structure shall have the necessary steps to get down from the landing to the grade of the lot. And that would be a change because right now we require that landing and steps occupy a maximum of 28 square feet. So that would delete that requirement. Then the next part, the referenced open unenclosed landings and steps shall not be calculated as part of the 35% lot coverage requirement. And that also would be a change. So those two items the committee felt would enable handicap ramps and whatnot to be done more quickly. And also handicap ramps would be permitted for emergency needs subject to approval of park management, planning and zoning director, and the chief of the county's building code. The next item, number 6, is a housekeeping measure regarding manufactured home gross floor area definitions. And then number 7, setback variances. When a variance from a required setback is approved for an improvement, if an adjoining property improvement is replaced later, then that adjoining property is also required to obtain a variance. And it was a consensus of the committee that the adjoining property improvement in this case for replacement would not be required to attain a variance as long as the setback requirements were met.
So in other words, their setbacks were fine. It's just because this other guy got close that all of a sudden made them have to trigger something. Okay, yeah, that doesn't make sense to
no.
Because still it's park management has approved all this stuff. Right, so, I mean, you know what I mean? I'm just saying they've approved they supported the variance. And they own the land next, you know, the lot next to it, so it's all their land, right? So
is that true, Mr. Lank? Does the park management
require? Yeah, it should be.
Okay.
It's all on piece of ground with leasable lots.
But as the board looks at these,
so you're dealing with tenants, you're
right?
Not
as the board looks at these variances as they come in from out of parks, is there always a reference by the applicant or whatever that there is support by the park management? Or is it not referenced?
Not always.
Huh?
Not always.
Well, it should be. It should be required that before they even get in to get the application that the park management supports it.
No, I agree. It should be.
That should be a
demi.
Yeah.
Should be part of the code.
That should be part of the code, right?
Couldn't agree with you more.
Huh?
I couldn't agree agree with you more. I think you're 100% right. Agree with you.
I'd love to hear you say that louder.
Yeah. Well, sometimes we forget to who owns the land.
All right.
I'm going to take the rest of the day off. Celebrate.
Go ahead, George.
Then we wanted to mention that the committee, the consensus of the committee was to leave this setback requirement of 20 feet for neighboring improvements, to leave that as is, and also to maintain the maximum 35% lot coverage requirement. There were a number of other issues brought up by Ms. Boucher, which are noted in the minutes on from the last meeting, and those were issues that she felt the committee should address in the future. So that pretty much summarizes the report.
Can I have the floor a minute?
Mr. Cole?
I think also, you know, we talk about the Board of Adjustment is granting variances because of hardship. Do we have a clear, Lawrence, definition? Does the board understand what a hardship is? The hardship can't be, I just bought a bigger unit and I want to put it here on this smaller lot. That can't be a hardship.
It's pretty specific in the code itself.
It is.
Basically gives guidelines. We actually set up a questionnaire that the applicant can use so that they can address, as an applicant comes forward, they can address those issues so that the board's question should have been answered up front. If the applicant would use those comments, they should be able to justify why they need a variance. But then the board's got to accept it if it meets that criteria of the code. I can read it to you if you want.
Yeah, I'm just curious because I read about they grant so many of them down there. And then occasionally they deny somebody. And they've denied somebody where in the past they've granted hundreds of them in the same situation, but then all of a sudden, just because somebody objects, they deny something. I mean, there needs to be something clear on, do they meet the definition of a hardship? If they don't, then sorry, it's a no.
It's about page. It describes what a variance is, the definition basically, it's long. Then it makes reference that no such variance shall be authorized by the board, unless it finds, being the board, that there are unique physical circumstances or conditions, including irregularity, narrowness, or shallowness of lot size or shape, or exceptional topographic or other physical conditions peculiar to the particular property, and that the unnecessary hardship is due to such conditions and not to circumstances or conditions generally created by the provisions of the zoning ordinance or code in the neighborhood or district in which the property is located. And number two, that because of such physical circumstances or condition, there is no possibility that the property can be developed in strict conformity with the provisions of the zoning ordinance or code, and that the authorization of a variance is therefore necessary to enable reasonable use of the property.
To enable reasonable use of the property. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Number three is that there's such unnecessary hardship has not been created by the applicant. And a lot of the hardship that you see are appealed variances or requests for something somebody's already purchased. It was that way when they bought it. And then
they already
surveyed. You get a survey done and find out that there's mm-hmm. mistakes. Surveyors disagree. And so they go to the board. And typically those are approved. They're already existing. It's already there. That the variance, if authorized, will not alter the essential character of the neighborhood or district in which the property is located and not substantially or permanently impair the appropriate use of, or development of adjacent property, nor be detrimental to public welfare.
Mm-hmm. Judgment.
And lastly, that the variance, if authorized, will represent the minimum variance that will afford relief and will represent the least modification possible of the regulation of that issue. That's the basic five. And then there's additional ones for issues in flood areas.
Okay.
They're separate.
Now, you talked about irregular shaped lots and size and different things, you know, that would trigger a variance. Is a smaller lot in the older parks, because the older parks had some smaller lots, is that automatically considered a hardship?
Not automatically, but it has been the majority of them, probably. Because the typical lot size required by code is 5,000 square foot.
Right.
And we have several parks that have the lots of 3,200 to 4,000 square feet. And they're only 30 or 40 feet wide. That's the problem.
But when that whole park is all done that uniformly at these smaller sizes, how does that become a hard? See, I can understand if you've got all these 5,000 square foot lots, and then there's all of a sudden you got a 3,200 square foot lot.
Well, they're not typically together.
But if you had a park, an older park with every lot being pretty much the same, small,
right?
That would be difficult in my mind to construe that to be a hardship because it's equal to all the others.
Yeah, basically, what they're applying for variances for typically is a spacing of the 20-foot separation.
Well, yeah, what
and
the larger
square footage, 35% lot coverage.
Right.
One of the discussions that we had in the committee, especially on the 8th of April, I believe that's right, Dee, was that could there be separate regulation for the older parks versus the new parks?
Right.
And that was discussed. We didn't come up with a rendering for that decision. We wanted to address that to council.
Well, when an old park puts a new home in on a piece of property, on a lot, what laws govern that? What setbacks govern that?
Setback in the older parks, typically, years ago when we changed the regulations to increase it to 5,000 square foot, we allowed for a provision that the ordinance allows for a provision that the 5-foot setbacks that we originally used would stand in those older parks, and 10-foot setbacks were required in the newer parks.
But isn't putting a new home on a lot of one of the older parks, isn't that an expansion, and shouldn't that come under the new code?
No. It's just a replacement of a unit. The lots don't change.
Mm-hmm.
The lots are already fixed.
So the lot is considered grandfathered in?
Yeah, but the difficulty is when they developed the older parks, units were smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And they could have been, and in the ordinance even references it right now, in the older parks you could have 400 square foot. That's 10 by 40, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And can you buy 400 square foot manufactured home today?
Mm-hmm.
Park model?
Probably not. It would be a park model. That's what I was going to use for an example.
Yeah.
They make motorhomes that big almost.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as what they're manufacturing today, it could be a single, double, or triple wide.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a quad. I don't know. I haven't heard that yet. But where they can connect units together.
And the fire marshal, is he, how involved are they in the spacing between units?
We had the fire marshal come in to the second meeting, I believe it was the second meeting. Yeah. And they're willing to, if we would send them notices of variances in parks, they will comment.
They will?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I got out of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're willing to review and comment in those situations.
Do all the parks have central water?
No. Most of them have central
like
water.
Like hydrants and stuff?
They have central water. I'm sure there are more parks with central water than there are parks with central water and hydrants.
Maybe part of our regulations ought to be that if in an older park with smaller lots and they want larger houses or larger units and they get closer together, which can be, again, a safety hazard, that for that to occur, that those particular parks would have to have central water systems with hydrants that would meet current standards, then we wouldn't be so concerned about maybe a fire.
Fire marshal will agree.
They would agree.
Yeah, they've made that reference.
They made that reference. Okay. Well, that's something maybe we could look to.
But
if we're seeing a trend towards bigger units on smaller lots,
some of the parks have done is take what they have smaller lots. They say they took three lots and made two.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they did it on their own. They weren't required by code.
Right.
Yeah.
And they wanted larger units, but they also wanted to provide the tenant more yard space. So
mm-hmm.
It worked out.
What the marketplace wants, I'm sure.
So they have well water? Is that what you're saying?
Pardon?
They have well water? Individual wells? Or
right.
They have a community
there
well?
There's a few that have wells serving a couple units.
Okay.
They have some that, there's actually parks out there that have septic systems that may serve either two or three units.
Right. Okay.
And the septic systems, in some cases, are actually in the buffer zone. Now, it's not in a recent park, but in when we first started creating parks.
All right. A lot of things we could do.
But, the one purpose of our discussion today was to get some directive from councils to if we should go forward with starting the preparation of the ordinances to meet these portions that we've discussed.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
I say yeah. I mean, we got to start somewhere. Let's put something together. Why don't you work something from these suggestions? and you heard some other things here today, and put it in a draft form, because until we really get something fixed to look at, we're just going to be jumping all over the place. So why don't you put together, why don't the staff put together a, and Mr. Moore, your assistants, put together a draft that will incorporate a lot of these issues we've just had a conversation on, and maybe make things, you know, tweak them best you can. And then we'll see if there's, you know, where we all like or dislike.
Is that the consensus of the council?
Mr. Lank, are you in favor of these changes? Do you recommend these
changes?
I have
no problem with these changes.
You have no problem with them? You recommend them?
Would I personally recommend them?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I can.
Okay.
For consideration.
Mm-hmm. For consideration.
If there's no objection, we'll allow staff to begin to work on that per Mr. Cole's suggestion. Anything else?
Thank you, Lawrence.
Good job.
Administrator's report.
Can't hurt.
You're almost out of here.
First item is South Coastal Regional Wastewater Facility Recognition. Attached is a copy of recognition from the Delaware Department of Natural Resources for the South Coastal Regional Wastewater Facility near Bethany Beach. As noted per this report, this facility was one of 20 that completed calendar year 2009 with zero violations of discharge monitoring report requirements.
Good.
We wish to congratulate Ms. Heather Sheridan, Mr. Rodney Marvel, Mr. Lauren George, and the staff of the South Coastal Regional Wastewater Facility for this accomplishment. And Heather and Rodney are here.
They're here.
And it's my understanding that this is the third year that
if you make it to August 6th or 7th, it'll be 4 years without a violation.
Wonderful.
If we make it to 5 years, we get another big plaque from NREC. And we'll make it to 5.
You work very well with the state government.
I think certainly it's well to recognize Ms. Sheridan and Mr. George for their job they do.
Next is substantial completion. The engineering department has granted substantial completion to the following projects: Bethany Crest Mobile Home Park on May 24th, developers Bethany Crest LLC. It's located on Route 26 in the Millville expansion of Bethany Sewer District, consisting of a 59-unit mobile home park and one commercial unit. Also, Bethany Bay sections 1.3 and 3.1. was granted substantial completion on May 25th. Developer is Linder & Company Incorporated and is located north of Road 350 in the Millville expansion of Bethany Sewer District, consisting of revisions to private roads, sewer, and the amount and locations of units for Bethany Bay, sections 1.3 and 3.1. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Marvel, before you leave, I missed you. I said I would certainly commend you too for a fine job you're doing.
Don't go in. Don't leave mad, please.
Just leave.
Congratulations.
Go back to work.
Congratulations.
At least Mr. George is working.
Anything else for Mr. Baker?
He could come.
Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Thank you.
Turn the meeting over to Ms. Webb, our finance director.
Thank you. Well, if you liked what Dave had to say about the projects and the consideration given.